Hello and welcome to Oncology Times broadcast news live from the American Society of Hematology meeting right here in New Orleans. I'm Peter Goodwin from AudioMedica.
I'm George Canellis from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston.
Well, George, it's great to see you here in New Orleans. And this meeting seems to me to be packed with interesting new developments, but I wonder what might have caught your eye.
Well, as it's the beginning of the meeting, one can survey the abstracts and see some of the new drugs that are coming along. And at least in the lymphoma area, for example, there are at least three or four interesting new agents, one of them being the combination of bortezomib in various other settings in lymphoma as opposed to myeloma and its activity. There is the immunotoxin called SGN-35 that has another name, but is very active in Hodgkin's disease, and the histone deacetylase inhibitor, panobinostat, which is also active in Hodgkin's disease. There's also a new anti-CD20 antibody, ofatumumab, which has an abstract here as to its activity in lymphoma, which is not great. Certainly it's not as great as this agent acts in chronic lymphatic leukemia, and I believe it's been approved for chronic lymphatic leukemia. But again, it's another interesting example of antibody development targeting CD20.
Well, let's get on with the show. And first off, a discussion from Jorge Cortez, who has some very interesting results with an old drug, but in a new guise. Omasetaxine is, in fact, the drug which used to be called homoharringtinine. And let's have a listen to what Dr. Cortez says right here about its use in combating the T315I mutation that is causing resistance to imatinib in chronic myeloid leukemia.
We selected only patients that had this particular mutation, CML, in any stage of the disease. It could be chronic phase, accelerated phase, or blast phase, but they had to have this mutation. And then these patients were given treatment with omasetaxin. In this study, a little different than what we've done in the past with this drug, is that we did a self-administration of a subcutaneous formulation of omasetaxin. And it was given for 14 days initially. Once the patients had some response, then it went to 7 days, and then we repeated these every 28 days. And these patients then were evaluated for response, et cetera.
What results did you get, in fact?
Well, we were very encouraged with the responses because we had that over 80% of patients, and I'm going to talk particularly about the chronic phase, which is a group that's a little bit more informative. About over 80% of patients had a hematologic response, complete hematologic response, meaning their counts normalized, their high white cell count and their high platelets, et cetera, they all went down to normal. Probably more important is that we saw now more than 30% of patients, almost 40% of patients, getting a cytogenetic response, meaning their chromosome is going away, which is the goal of therapy in CML. And that's very encouraging because the white cell count, after all, you can say you can get that with other drugs. But the cytogenetic response gets us very excited.
It is very difficult to make an impact on accelerated phase disease or blast crisis. Did you have any results there?
We did, not nearly as good as in the chronic phase. We had some hematologic responses, and some patients actually did have a nice stabilization of their disease, and there's a suggestion that that probably have been living longer than you would otherwise expect, although there's no control arm, so that's just an educated guess based on your experience. But certainly some patients did respond, and there was one patient in accelerated phase with a cytogenetic response.
How significant do you think this particular compound could be in the battle against T315I?
I think it's likely to be very significant. For one, we don't have anything else. So this is a very welcome addition because at least we would offer the possibility, if this drug were to become fully available to everybody, then we would have the option to have a treatment option for these patients. The next step would be that one of the advantages of this drug is that it works through a different mechanism of action. So, and we already have evidence that there is the potential synergy between this drug and imatinib or dasatinib or nilotinib. So it offers the possibility of maybe starting using combinations to prevent this mutation from happening, to use it in the more advanced stages of the disease, et cetera. Other things that could happen. Actually, we have a poster in this meeting where we did just that. We treated patients with omasataxin and imatinib in patients in the advanced stage of the disease, and several patients responded. So that's an early hint that a strategy like that may be useful.
One of the experts on CML I caught up with here in New Orleans listening to Dr. Cordes' news on omasataxin was Jane Appley of Imperial College London. What did she think about the results?
I think the data are rather specific because they're about patients who have the T315I mutation who receive omasataxin, because this is an unmet need for patients, because clearly if a patient fails imatinib and doesn't have the T315I mutation, one would go to one of the second generation drugs, dasatinib, nilotinib or bosutinib. But for those with the T315I, unless you're able to put them in a trial of one of the very new agents, which are still in phase one dose-finding studies, then omasataxin seems to be an excellent possibility.
What do you make of its potential success in blast crisis and accelerated phase?
Probably very little does any good in blast crisis, and accelerated phase is a heterogeneous group of patients, some of whom are very close to chronic phase and some of whom are very close to blast crisis and with a range in between. So those patients who are close biologically to chronic phase will probably do quite well, and those who are close to blast crisis will do badly.
Jane Appley from London. George Canales, what do you make of the sort of results that Jorge Cortes has found here with omasataxin?
Well, I think it's very interesting, and I'll say it's more historically interesting at the moment. Homoharringtonin was a drug that's been around at least 25 years, maybe longer, of Chinese origin. It was called homoharringtonin, and it was thought to be an anti-leukemic drug, and it had some activity in chronic myeloid leukemia, and it was tested in chronic myeloid leukemia. It was superseded by the imatinib era, and now the dasatinib-nilotinib era, the tyrosine kinase inhibitors. Now, it certainly does not have the order of activity that imatinib has in chronic leukemia so far. The major cytogenetic responses that were reported by Dr. Cortes were about 27%, and the molecular ones were very, very small, namely 15%. Now, it is conceivable that this is a cytotoxic drug that happens to work in this variant, but one would ask, what would hydroxyurea in high dose, or 6-mercaptopurine, or even Mylaran in reasonable doses do to this kind of patient? And if pushed hard enough, could you get cytogenetic remissions? I think it would be difficult with the classical drugs used for chronic myeloid leukemia. So it's going to be interesting whether or not they can push it harder and see whether or not they will get the kind of biological responses that are seen with the tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
What should the busy doctor, though, take from this sort of news that there are at least developments happening to overcome this mutation that causes resistance?
Well, I think the busy doctor should take comfort in the fact that people are working very hard in trying to discover better treatments for chronic myeloid leukemia, and you can generalize that and say all the malignancies. And there is a long queue of agents that are active in these diseases just waiting to be clinically tested, and it's a long and slow process, as everyone knows, besotted by need for patients, administrative complications and governmental complications. But people should be reassured that there are things happening. Whether or not this particular drug is going to be a big blow for chronic myeloid leukemia, I doubt it. I think the tyrosine kinase inhibitors have done extremely well. In fact, the new generation ones seem to be even better than imatinib, at least in one of the randomized trials presented at this meeting.
George Canales, thank you very much, and more from you a little bit later in the program. The JAK signaling pathway wasn't understood until around the end of 2004, but now a JAK pathway inhibitor has been used therapeutically to treat myelofibrosis. The ASH conference heard about this from Sir Janva Stafshik from the MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston.
Because of fibrosis, patients suffer from anemia, big spleen, and poor quality of life, and they die without any therapy available between 5 and 7 years. So now, several years ago, the JAK2 mutation was found in about half of the patients. This makes a protein. JAK2 protein is an enzyme inside the cells that makes cells grow. And because the mutation doesn't add any stimuli to work, so that makes sense. It makes cells grow. This is myeloproliferative disease. We can now target this enzyme by giving patients JAK2 inhibitors.
Could you explain to me what, in fact, you did in the study that you've reported?
So INCB018424, or 424 for short, is the oral agent, which is a small molecule inhibitor of JAK2 enzyme. It binds to it and competitively inhibits binding of ATP, which is the energy source for this enzyme to act. And by doing this, we witness in patients a marked reduction of the tumor burden, which in this disease means marked reduction and some patients complete elimination of the big spleen that develops in these patients because of the failure of the bone marrow. This spleen is the site of a major disease activity. This is where the blood is mostly produced and that goes away.
How many patients did you look at and what happened to them?
We enrolled about 153 patients so far in phase 1 study, studying different doses and schedules. I am happy to say that of all the patients ever treated, after 16 months of follow-up, 75% of the patients are still on the therapy because of the efficacy and amazing safety of this drug. The drug, interestingly, does not discriminate between affecting the malignant enzyme, mutated enzyme, and normal JAK2. So it does help patients with and without mutation.
There wasn't a control group, but what sort of difference did it make to the outlook for these patients?
So any patient that has tried it had a good chance of response. The response is massive decrease in spleen size. That is one of major characteristics of the disease. Marked improvement in the quality of life, meaning the patients gain weight, patients can walk more, patients eliminate pruritus, night sweating, bone pain. The signs and symptoms of the disease in majority of the patients are very well controlled or completely eliminated.
Richard Larson from the University of Chicago chaired the news briefing at which Dr. Verstafschik talked. He gave us a comment.
Chronic myeloproliferative neoplasms are a steadily progressive disorder. It's been a challenge in the past because many of these patients can live fairly comfortably for a number of years with very minimal intervention. However, as the disease progresses, it becomes a life-threatening disorder and can also be quite disabling, not only in terms of blood counts, but splenomegaly in particular.
How might practice change then? What should doctors be doing with this knowledge?
Well, I think it remains to be seen how effective the JAK2 inhibitors will be for this spectrum of diseases. There are several molecules that are in clinical trials. The one we heard about this morning is the furthest along and may have some advantages against other JAK signaling pathways.
Richard Larson. Well now, George Kanellos, if I can turn to you again, this JAK2 signaling pathway, what do you gather from what we've just been hearing about, this very interesting news that there is a treatment for myelofibrosis?
Well, I think everything has to be put in perspective. This abstract was presented by somebody from the MD Anderson, but it was a collaboration with other individuals from Mayo Clinic, etc. The story of the JAK2 story is evolved only a few years ago when it was found that in myeloproliferative disorders such as polycythemia vera, myelofibrosis, and essential thrombocythemia do have mutated examples of JAK2 as part of their pathogenesis. What exactly is the abnormality in the signaling that confers the complete syndrome is not clear. But what is clear is that there is a mutation of JAK2. What is also fascinating that within a very short period of time that there are inhibitors, and this one is just one of them, to JAK2 that have emerged from the scientific mill of basic science. And I think that's terrific. Now, this material, this agent, worked in myelofibrosis to the extent that it decreased the white blood count, it decreased the spleen size, and improved generally the patient with the disease. Now, this is a disease for which there is really no standard therapy. In the past, there was some cytotoxics used. Splenectomy was used. But it is basically a disorder of the bone marrow, which is scarred over by normal fibroblasts that are stimulated by something that evolves from basically neoplastic megakaryocytes. And eventually the whole marrow becomes fibrotic, and the spleen becomes an extramedullary site, as does the liver. Now, if someday one can actually figure out how to inhibit that whole process and reverse the myelofibrosis, which I believe is possible, then a bigger impact on that disease will be made. But until that time, we have these JAK2 inhibitors that are interesting and active in the disease. But it's only half the story. I think there is still work to be done in understanding the pathogenesis.
George Canellos, thank you very much. Well, that's all for today, but more tomorrow. I'll be back with you again here in New Orleans. So for the time being, from the ASH meeting in New Orleans, I'm Peter Goodwin for Oncology Times Broadcast News.